I'm Brian Lehrer. This is my Daily Politics Podcast from WNYC Studios. It's Friday, February 11th. So we're all feeling higher prices on various things in our lives right now, right? Inflation hit another 40-year high, as announced yesterday. Did you hear that one? 7.5% higher prices on average for the things that they measure in the Consumer Price Index for the month of January compared to January of last year. And so we're all deciding what we can still afford and what we can't. A healthy eating friend of mine told me yesterday the breaking point for her on one of her favorite things was to see pea shoots jump by $5 in the pack that she usually buys them in. She couldn't do it anymore. Just couldn't justify $5 more just for a few servings of pea shoots. But as we're all making decisions about what we can or can't buy, the companies that sell us stuff are making decisions about what they can or can't charge. Here's Massachusetts Senator Elizabeth Warren speaking on MSNBC after acknowledging that some inflation is being caused by unavoidable pressures like the cost of supplies and kinks in the supply chain, but
there's another part to what's going on, too. And that is these giant corporations who say, wow, a lot of talk about high prices and inflation. This is a chance to get in there and not only pass along costs, but to inflate prices beyond that and just engage in a little straightforward price gouging. We now live in a time when profit margins are higher than they have been in 70 years. Two-thirds of the publicly traded companies in this country are seeing higher profit margins than they did before the pandemic. Now, your profit margins don't go up just because your costs went up. They go up because you saw an opportunity and you said, as the chair of the Federal Reserve said to me yesterday in testimony, why are they raising prices? Because they can.
Why are they raising prices? Because they can. Elizabeth Warren on MSNBC. And I know there are any number of you Democrats hearing that right now thinking, why didn't we nominate her for president again? But too late. Warren also argued we should remember the big picture. More jobs created last year than any other single year, even as inflation is a problem. But about that price gouging, there's a great Twitter thread by economics expert Lindsay Owens, who used to work for Senator Warren, that nails specific industries and specific companies for literally bragging about how they're hiding behind real inflation to increase prices more than their costs are going up, as Senator Warren said, because they can. Let's dive in. With me now is Lindsay Owens, PhD, Executive Director of the Groundwork Collaborative, a progressive economic advocacy group. She was previously an economic policy advisor in Senator Warren's office and teacher of a course on domestic poverty and inequality at Georgetown University and more. And she wrote that Twitter thread. Dr. Owens, thanks for joining us. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks so much for having me.
One example you give is, of all things, bragging about price gouging by 3M, as you point out, a company that makes N95 masks. Really?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, I will say we found dozens of examples from healthcare companies. 3M, producer of N95 masks, a quote from the CFO on their earnings call, "The team has done a marvelous job in driving price. Price has gone up from 0.1% to 0.1.4% to 2.6%. And he said, he followed that up with, "We really see that to be a tailwind." So he's talking about not only, the price hikes from this past quarter, but the price hikes on the horizon. Another healthcare company that folks are quite familiar with, Johnson & Johnson, obviously has raked in billions from COVID vaccine sales. You know, they told investors, the CEO of Johnson & Johnson told investors in their fourth quarter report that the additional need from Americans for medical care to address, quote, suffering and death is part of Johnson & Johnson's, quote, optimism and, quote, opportunity for its future.
I want to ask you to say that again, because it's just so grotesque. And we note that I wonder what Johnson & Johnson's first quarter 2022 earnings are going to look like, because I think its vaccine isn't doing so well compared to the others now. But what was that quote?
Yeah, so the CEO of Johnson & Johnson told investors that the need for medical care to address suffering and death is part of Johnson & Johnson's, quote, optimism and, quote, opportunity for its future.
Yeah, I'm looking at your tweet. Address suffering and death was a quote, in quotes, an optimism and opportunity for its future, obviously, quotes. So let's hear a few more examples from some of you who are calling in on where you draw the line and what you're willing to absorb, and then we'll go back to what this means and what the government could do about it with our guest, economics expert Lindsay Owens. I was just going to go. All right. The caller who said that they're canceling their Netflix subscription because it went up too much just dropped out. Danny in Chelsea has another food item, I think. Hi, Danny. You're on WNYC.
Hey there. I draw the line at blueberries. I eat them every morning with my yogurt, and I know it's seasonal. I know it's winter. I know there's shipping costs, but something's going on because street vendors have blueberries for like $1.99, $2.99, and supermarkets now have them for $7.99, $8.99, and I don't know what's going on. They're a vital nutrient, I feel, but fruit is getting ridiculous. But there's a lot of factors involved. I do know that.
Danny, thank you very much. My producer says she saw a $7 pack of blueberries this week. Debbie in Sussex has another kind of food to shout out. Hi, Debbie. You're on WNYC.
Hi. My problem is with cat food. I'm a pet owner. And normally, I have two older cats, and sometimes you give them canned food as well as dry food. But canned food in New Jersey right now, at least in Sussex County, is like toilet paper was in 2020. The shelves are bare. In Walmart, ShopRite, you name a store, there are no cans of cat food. And what there is so ridiculously overpriced. It went from under 50 cents a can to 80, sometimes a dollar for a can of cat food. So I've taken to literally hunting for cat food where I can find it and then meagerly adding it to dry food for my cats. And when you change an animal's diet, that can have, real consequences. So I would love to know where all the cat food is.
Debbie, thank you very much. Well, let's pause there and ask our guest. Dr. Owens, do you know where all the cat food is?
I don't know that I can speak to the cat food specifically, but I do think the viewer, the listener is raising just a really great point about supply shortages. Inflation is a really complex issue, and there are a number of factors that are driving these high prices. And one of them is our supply chain is really broken. People love to blame the pandemic for that. Of course, the pandemic may have broken the supply chains back, but the osteoporosis really started setting in decades ago. We built a supply chain that runs on razor-thin margins. We drove towards just-in-time logistics where we had no extra product on the shelves and we made everything to order. We offshored a lot of our domestic capacity to keep labor costs down. And the result is we built an economy that couldn't really handle a little bit of an increase in demand. We could blame the pandemic for that, but that started decades ago. And my view is that the American economy should be resilient, that we should have redundancy in the supply chain so that we can absorb shocks. And COVID is really just the beginning. We're headed into a world where we're going to increasingly see climate and weather-related shocks that are really going to disrupt the supply chain. And I think we should use this moment as a wake-up call to start engineering a supply chain that can meet the needs of consumers.
Some of the ones coming in on Twitter, listener writes, I've gone back to my student days and I'm feeding my family dried beans soaked or lentils and pasta. Meat has always been low priority, but now it's out of my price range. Somebody else writes, price at a local market in Brooklyn for a jar of Hellman's mayonnaise, $8.59. Won't pay more than $4.75 for this condiment. Someone else, we had the blueberries caller. This listener says, Driscoll's Organic Strawberries are now at $10.99 a package, up from $7 or $8. I just can't do it. Trevor in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Trevor.
Hi, Brian. Big fan. Listening to your show, you know, every day of theirs. You're one of the few journalists I trust.
Thank
my
you.
Main question is really, you know, I think my political affiliations will be made clear by my question, but really, what is price gouging in a capitalist system? Isn't the way, you know, there's not generalized reciprocity, the way we exchange goods is kind of trying to get the better deal over the other guy, you know?
Dr. Owens, it's an existential question about capitalism. What is price gouging when it's legal and at the heart of the system that you're trying to make as much money as you can?
Yeah, this is such an important point. I would give two answers. The first is that the listener is absolutely right that this is the system in some ways working properly. Now, I think we can set monopoly and concentration aside, and I'll come back to that for a second. But what we see on these earnings calls is shareholders are really rewarding this profiteering. And we know that not only are shareholders rewarding the profiteering, when Tyson announced those, you know, that doubling of profits, they saw a lot of people, flooding to the stock. But what we've also seen is sort of disciplining by shareholders when companies don't really execute on pricing strategies. So folks who maybe wanted to drive on market share instead of on profits and prices have seen savage sell-offs. And so we've seen shareholders disciplining companies who don't go as far as they can on prices. And so this is absolutely baked into the system. I think there's a separate question around, you know, the definition of price gouging and what sort of constitutes, and, you know, some of the legal terminology here, like an unconscionably excessive price. And I think there, you know, it's a question for policymakers. It's maybe a question, a philosophical question, but there's a couple of ways that we can sort of decide when things have, gone up at a level that we're not comfortable with, right? So we can look at prices like pre and post pandemic. We can look at prices, you know, for seasonal goods. We can say, okay, like, what is the average price here of blueberries in a February? And like, why are blueberries this much higher in February now, right? So there's a couple of ways to sort of cut the data to get at this. But I absolutely think this is baked into our system. Now, what's really exacerbating their ability to keep driving on price, that's another one of these euphemisms that the CEOs love to use in the earnings calls. We're really having a lot of success driving on price, is again, this highly, highly concentrated system. When there's not competition, the biggest players are really able to recoup a lot in a moment like this, and are really well positioned to seize the moment. So we see this with folks like Procter & Gamble and Kimberly & Clark, who are basically the only two games in town on diapers, which so many families need and which we've seen real price increases on. Mm. But we've also seen this throughout the supply chain. There are basically three large ocean shipping alliances. It's practically a cartel, and they're seeing profits up like 100 and the highest profits they've had in 117 years, the profit margins. And so where you have concentration, you know, competition, of course, is not a panacea, but competition would, of course, you know, help drive some of this pricing down. And that isn't how sort of markets are supposed to function, right? We want our markets to function in competitive ways where everyone can get in the game, bring their product to market, and compete fair and square on a level playing field.
I'm going to play a clip of President Biden yesterday. He was asked a question by Lester Holt from NBC News, and he kind of snapped at Lester Holt. But I want to get at the underlying issue here. Here we go.
I think it was back in July you said inflation was going to be temporary. I think a lot of Americans are wondering what your definition of temporary is.
Well, you're being a wise guy with me a little bit, and I understand that's your job.
So I don't know if you saw that yesterday, but President Biden did say that inflation would be temporary. The word that we often hear, or I feel like we heard it more 6 months ago than we hear it today, is transitory. So from the point of view of your expertise, what is transitory inflation, and what can President Biden do about it? I know we just talked about some of the policy tools at the government's disposal, but here we are in an election year, and so much more of the media coverage of the economy is about inflation than it is about the record jobs growth in the last year.
Yeah, I think that's right. Look, inflation is a problem for consumers. It's also a political problem. There's a lot of political science research linking prices, particularly gas prices, to things like presidential approval and vote share for the incumbent president. Inflation is also a complicated beast, and there aren't a huge amount of tools that the president has to take this on overnight. But there are a few, right? So the first is we absolutely have to get the pandemic under control. Some of what we're seeing here with the supply shortages is really about changes in consumer spending patterns, spending a little bit less money on services like restaurant meals and spending a lot more money on goods like, you know, a new couch because you've been sitting in the same couch for 3 years during the pandemic and also cooking more meals at home. And so the more we get the pandemic under control, the more we should start to see a settling out of that sort of demand shift for services and goods. So that's going to be a key part of this. Another part of this is really doubling down on the investments that can build that more resilient supply chain. So things like what the Biden administration has already done by passing the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, that bipartisan bill that does allow for some of the investments we need in shoring up our supply chain to try to build out more capacity to meet that excess demand. I think what we don't want to see is the Federal Reserve overreacting. You know, they have a very blunt instrument. It's interest rate hikes. And interest rate hikes aggressively slow demand, but by making folks poorer and by slowing wage growth and employment. And we like the jobs growth that we're seeing. The jobs numbers last Friday, you know, over 500,000 jobs, revision from the prior month to, again, about 600,000. You know, that job growth is really good. Hopefully that tightening labor market is driving some of that wage growth we're seeing, giving workers more power. So we don't want to use interest rates and sort of overcorrect because of political concerns, right? Like, you've got to get those dials right. The last thing President Biden can do is really move forward to pass legislation that lowers costs on big ticket items. So in that original Build Back Better Act proposal, there was a lot of money to juice housing supply. That is a pretty critical piece of bringing down rent prices. There was money to bring down the cost of childcare, which has been soaring and is a big ticket item for families with young children. Money to bring down energy costs, tax credits for alternative energy sources. And so those types of policies, while they won't obviously have an impact overnight, are going to be key to building that resilient economy and an economy where Americans can keep up with rising prices and also, you know, see real wage growth increase, right? So that's wage growth over and above the cost of living increases.
Sachin in Los Angeles, you're on WNYC. Hello from New York, Sachin.
Hey, hi, this is Sachin. Two comments. So the first thing is the guest mentioned around the Build Back Better. We already know the third stimulus has caused a lot of inflation. So I don't even know what would that Build Back Better do in terms of aggravation of this. But my larger comment was the second point. We have limited ports, and the ports are run by unions. And who have resisted automation and additional workforce to smooth the flow between the ships coming in and the fulfillment of the orders, and the government is not doing anything. So, I would love your thoughts from your guests around that.
Sachin, thank you very much. So, two points there, Dr. Owens. One, the last one about the union wages and union rules. Boxing up the ports, and the first one about have we passed the point where stimulus is just relief in a floundering economy when pandemic unemployment was so high and gotten to the point where it's overstimulating and therefore causing inflation, both things.
Yeah, so let me take the question about sort of excess demand and stimulus. demand in the economy is a good thing. We want families to be able to afford basics. We want them to be able to even afford things that they need and want, like that couch we talked about before, you know, upgrading the couch you've been sitting on for 3 years in the pandemic. I don't think we want to be in a position where slowing demand is our goal. I think we want to be really building out increased capacity to meet that additional demand. So, you know, that's where I am on this demand issue. On the question of unions and labor, this is coming up a lot, and I think it's so critical to address it for listeners. You talked earlier about Starbucks raising prices and seeing a lot of record profits. You talked about McDonald's as well. You know, these are companies, Starbucks in particular right now, that are aggressively busting unions and are blaming workers' wages for the price increases and not profiteering. The Economic Policy Institute just put out a really important paper about 2 weeks ago. And what they did is they took, at the industry level, data on price acceleration and data on wage increases. And, you know, what you would expect to see if sort of workers' wages were driving these price hikes. And, you know, obviously one thing that unions do is help boost wages, right? So what you would see if this was a story of workers' wages or sort of a union story, you would see a positive relationship between those two facts, the acceleration of prices and the acceleration of wages. What the Economic Policy Institute discovered is that there's no relationship. It's really a flat line right now. And so that can give us a lot of confidence that wage increases are not driving price increases. Economists like to talk about something called a wage price spiral, where wages feed into this price need for price increases. I think what we're seeing right now is actually a profit price spiral, where the profiteering that we're seeing with the Fortune 500 is feeding in to these price increases.
And that is going to be the last word as we continue to cover the economy on the show and try to talk about it in a nuanced way, not sort of a tabloid headline way that leaves you with an oversimplified idea about what's going on. We thank today's guest, Lindsay Owens, PhD, Executive Director of the Groundwork Collaborative, a progressive economic advocacy group. She was previously an economics policy advisor in Senator Elizabeth Warren's office and teacher of a course on domestic poverty and inequality at Georgetown University. And that Twitter thread that she's got going in the last day or two is gathering thousands and thousands of views and likes, and we thought it was worth bringing it on the air. Thank you, Dr. Owens.
Thanks for having me.
Brian Lehrer, a Daily Politics podcast, is an excerpt from my live daily radio show, The Brian Lehrer Show, on WNYC Radio, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, if you want to listen live at wnyc.org. Thanks for listening today. Talk to you next time.